Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight was raised in Akron, Ohio, was an aspiring violinist, and went to Duke University as a pre-med major, but would pass out every time she walked into the emergency room. At age 28, she became the COO of a 650-bed hospital in Akron, Ohio. In 2003, she became the president and CEO of the second-largest healthcare system in Michigan, Henry Ford Health System. Her name, Nancy Schlichting, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Nancy Schlichting, the president and CEO of Henry Ford Health System, the second largest healthcare system in Michigan. Nancy, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
It's great to be here, Jack. Thanks so much.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I was very fortunate to have two wonderful parents. I grew up in Akron, Ohio. Actually born in New York City, but my parents moved to Ohio when I was 2.5. And my dad is a nuclear engineer, a very smart guy, and was an inventor. Has 8 patents to his name and worked for a large engineering firm for 37 years. My mother was a school teacher who retired when she had her, I think, third child and decided it was pretty tough to manage both the home life and the teaching career. But she was always a teacher and instilled in us a great thirst for knowledge, and we had a lot of books around the house. And she really demanded excellence in all 4 of her children and was a very major influence in my life.
You loved the violin. Can we talk about that?
I did. I started the violin at age 8. I was in 4th grade, and I rejected the piano because I didn't like my piano teacher. And fortunately, my mom allowed us to have independent thought, even though she wanted all of her kids to play the piano. And I told her I was going to play the violin. She said, fine, you know, we'll rent the violin for a year and then see if you really like it. And I did. I absolutely loved it. And I played until 9th grade, actually, when I became a debater. We moved to a different high school, and at that time they didn't have an orchestra. So all my friends were in high school debate, so I kind of flipped into that mode of thinking. But I continue to love the violin, and I actually play in the lobby of Henry Ford Hospital during the holidays.
When somebody comes into your office with a story that doesn't set well with you, do you ever pull the violin out and do the Henny Youngman
routine?
No, but
it's a great idea. I think I'm going to think about that. So,
you go to Duke University as a pre-med major. What happens?
Well, I always thought I wanted to be a doctor, so I was pre-med when I started in my undergraduate career. Chemistry major, actually, at that time, but started in this pre-med society where you got to go into the ER at Duke Hospital and get some experience, and I just couldn't handle it. My stomach couldn't handle it, and I ended up passing out a couple times and thought, well, this may not be it. So I started exploring other avenues and actually switched to public policy because it combined my interest in health policy and sort of debate with the interest in the clinical side of healthcare.
How did you actually get a job in the healthcare administration field?
Well, it was during that major. As a public policy major, we were required to have an internship between my junior and senior year in college. And I worked at a hospital in Virginia where my dad was transferred there during my college years, and worked at Lynchburg General Hospital and just fell in love with the hospital environment. So the rest is history.
You're 28 years old, and you become the COO of Akron City Hospital, the town you grew up in. It's a 650-bed hospital. How did this young lady handle and oversee all of these old docs, etc.?
Well, it really is an interesting story because at age 28, I was clearly, in my mind, not really ready for that type of a challenge. I didn't have, in my view, enough experience. But people in the hospital really felt that I had the leadership potential. And when the job opened up, kind of unexpectedly, I had some of the sort of older leaders in the organization convince me that I should put my hat in the ring. So I actually wrote my boss a letter. and outlined all the reasons that he should consider me for that role. And the interesting thing is, if you asked him today, you know, would you have selected Nancy if she hadn't written that letter, he'd probably say no. So I learned from that that you have to kind of promote yourself a little bit into these opportunities and be willing to take the risk involved.
How did you ever get to Henry Ford Health Systems?
Well, actually, that's also an interesting story, because after my graduate work, I did a fellowship at the American Hospital Association in Chicago and met a gentleman named Gail Warden, who was the chief operating officer there in the late 70s. And Gail followed my career and actually was very instrumental in my going back to Akron to work for one of his friends, Al Gilbert, who was my mentor there. And Gail followed me and kind of kept up with me, and I got a call in 1998 to consider coming to Henry Ford, and because it was Gail, I gave it a lot of consideration and ended up here, and I was very fortunate.
Many times you referred to Gail as your mentor. How does a young person find the right mentor and then convince him or her to be their mentor?
Well, I think some of it's luck and some of it's seizing opportunity. And in my case, you know, I was very fortunate to work at the American Hospital Association with remarkable people, including Gail. And I also wanted to make sure that Gail knew who I was. And as a fellow, you know, you had some exposure to him, but every time I had a chance to get a little bit more contact with Gail, I always tried to take it. So I think you really want to make sure that those people that you want to notice you can notice you, and that you're willing to actually do the work that hopefully will have them take an interest.
For other listeners who are possible mentors, what is the job of a mentor?
I think the job of a mentor is to open doors, to provide guidance and support for career decisions and also career development opportunities. And I think also to be an individual that hopefully sets a good example for others that they can learn from just by observing and by having conversations about, you know, meaningful issues.
We're talking to Nancy Schlichting. When we come back, we'll ask her about the importance of networking in business today. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Nancy Schlichting, who in 2005 was selected as one of the top 10 newsmakers of the year by Crain's Detroit Business. Nancy, networking today in business is paramount. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think we need to network every day in terms of opening doors and creating opportunities to learn new things and meet new people. And in my business, in healthcare, we are a relationship-centered kind of organization. And as a result, the kinds of relationships we can create are really limitless and create opportunities to know people, help support people, as well as really support the provision of patient care. So networking is very central to everything that I do each and every day.
It's probably easier for men to network because it can network on a golf course, a ball field. Little harder in a lot of cases for women to network. Can you talk about women networking?
Well, I think it's everybody has some of the same challenges. You know, how you start that conversation, how you introduce yourself, how you get to know people that you may not have any background with. And yet you never know what the connections can be to help support your work. But for women, I think for years, you know, it was very difficult. In fact, when I got started in healthcare, I was one of very, very few women in administration. So I actually did learn how to play golf, so that I could go on the golf course with my male colleagues and the physicians and others that tended to do some of their work on the golf course. But I also felt it would build relationships, so I did that. And I do encourage women to try to advance themselves in terms of networking by sometimes doing the things that may not be completely natural for them. But I also think women have to join clubs, they have to join organizations that will help them with that networking.
If some listener says, I'm going to start to go to charity events, it's one thing to go to the event, but how do they learn to approach people?
Well, I think you have to avoid what's most natural, and that is hanging around with the same people that you know, and actually go up to someone and introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your organization or what you do. and just try to really meet some new people. And you may set a goal at any event or any meeting function that you're going to meet two or three new people at that event that will you'll take their business card and stay in touch and make those connections really count.
Can you talk about the glass ceiling for women in business?
Well, unfortunately, I mean, I've been in healthcare for over 25 years, and it's disappointing to me that there are not more women, certainly in top leadership positions in healthcare. And the same is true in business. We have not made the progress that I think even 10 years ago we thought we would have made. But I think that, you know, sometimes the glass ceiling, if we feel we're victims of it, we're going to be victims of it. If we view it as hopefully something that can be overcome, then we're more likely to take some risk, really reach out, have the relationships that will help open doors and hopefully make opportunity available. So I think part of it's a mindset on all of our parts to really hopefully make that disappear.
Can you talk to us about Henry Ford Health System? What that system entails?
The Henry Ford Health System is really an extraordinary healthcare organization because it is so different, frankly, than most other health systems. We are an organization that is integrated in terms of a physician group of 700 physicians. We have an academic medical center with the Henry Ford Hospital. We have community hospitals, three of them. We have a psychiatric hospital and a behavioral health hospital that supports drug abuse and alcohol treatment. We also have a health plan, the Health Alliance plan, that's part of our organization, and a whole range of community care services that provide the entire continuum of care for our patients and the members that we serve. So we're very diverse, we're very large, and we provide truly soup to nuts in terms of health care.
You have 700 salaried physicians. That's not the norm with most hospitals today. Why do you do that?
Well, our physician group, the Henry Ford Medical Group, started with Henry Ford. His vision when we were founded in 1915 was to have salaried physicians that truly were aligned with the hospital organization. And in our case, they came from Johns Hopkins. We have really stayed with that model over the years because we believe it is an outstanding way to provide the highest quality care and to really make sure that there are not competing interests between the physicians and the hospital in how we deliver our services. We provide real team medicine. Our physicians collaborate with one another. They don't compete with one another, and that's a great strength for patients.
In your role as president and CEO, what's the biggest challenge you and the system faces today?
I think really today our biggest challenge is making sure we meet the expectations of those people that we serve. And that relates to quality, it relates to service, it relates to making sure we have the appropriate staffing and support and resources to make sure that patient care is delivered in the absolute best fashion. And it's always a challenge because we rely on governmental payment, and some of the, you know, nuances of the political environment certainly affect our world every day. But what I want to do as the leader is to create an environment where our physicians, our nurses, our other caregivers and support service people can deliver on that promise to our patients and members.
Your team consists of 16,800 people, and every day this team touches people who are at an extremely vulnerable point in their lives. So you need great bedside manners from all 16,800 people. How do you make that happen?
Well, again, I think that most people that enter healthcare want to do absolutely the best job possible. They're motivated to care for others. They care about people. Our job in leadership is to create the atmosphere and the resources and the tools that help them really execute on that every single day. We have to make sure that we are providing a consistent message of what our expectations are, really supporting everyone in terms of their reaching their own potential. And when we do that, the atmosphere is positive and we can really provide the highest quality of service and clinical care.
Every hospital is competing against each other for the best talent. How are you trying to attract the best people to this area and to your hospital system?
Well, we want people to be happy in their work. And frankly, we measure employee and physician satisfaction on a yearly basis to really understand what we can do to make their work lives better. And by listening to our employees and physicians and responding to their needs and creating an environment where all of our management really supports and is there as a resource, as a servant leader to each of our staff, that's the kind of atmosphere where people will be happy, they'll stay, they'll want to come work for that type of an organization.
As the leader, how do you try to effectively communicate to these 16,800 people so that it's one melodious symphony?
Well, you know, as a past violinist, I think of my job kind of as an orchestra conductor, really making all of the various sounds and melodies and instruments come together in a positive way. And to communicate effectively is a full-time job. I view it as a strategic imperative, and I work in 100 ways to be visible, to be available, and to make sure that we're providing a very consistent message to all of our staff.
We're talking to Nancy Schlichting, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Nancy Schlichting, who in 2005 was named by Modern Healthcare Magazine the 40th most powerful person in healthcare. And that's why you can drive the ball 280, right?
I keep working on that. So,
what is Henry Ford Health System doing to improve and strengthen our community?
Well, we view Henry Ford as a real part of the solution for Detroit and the region. We view ourselves as a community asset, and we think we have tremendous responsibility to that community. So we're working very hard in a number of areas to enhance Detroit. One of the most important ones is our growth strategy, and we're fortunate that Henry Ford Hospital is the fastest growing hospital in the state of Michigan. And that allows for job creation here in Detroit, new services to be provided. And just in the last 2 years, we've opened two new sites in Detroit, one at New Center One for a lot of our internal medicine primary care specialties. And also, we opened the new Harbortown site on Jefferson to be in keeping with some of the housing growth on that side of the community. So we want to continue to be very involved in economic development, community development, as well as the provision of health care to meet the needs of this community.
When I did some research on you, Nance, pages came up regarding boards that you've been on, activities that you've led for causes, every cause under the sun. Why do you do so much?
Well, first of all, I started volunteering when I was 15 years old. So part of this was based on values of my family that said you give back and you always contribute to the community you live in. But as I've progressed in my career and my life, I enjoy it. That's part of my networking is really contributing to a variety of community organizations. And I get a lot of personal rewards from the contributions that I'm able to make. So it really is a combination of factors, but I encourage all leaders to be involved in the community.
How do you encourage the 16,800 people to also give back?
Well, we've done that actually in two important ways. One is we create lots of opportunities for our employees to participate in community activities like the American Heart Association Heart Walk or the UNCF Walk or the Juvenile Diabetes Walk. We create the opportunities and they love participating. And in addition, we expect all of our leaders to participate on community boards and be involved and set a good example for those that they work with each day.
When we come back, we'll ask Nancy about being a great leader. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Nancy Schlichting, the president and CEO of Henry Ford Health System, which in 2005 had revenues of $3.05 billion. Nancy, what makes a great servant leader?
Well, I think a servant leader has a sense of humility about the role they're in that is very important. It is not ego-driven. It's driven to meet the needs of the organization. If you view yourself as a servant, you really are supporting everyone else in the organization and meeting the needs, the objectives in terms of performance, and also the personal needs of those individuals that will really contribute to the success of the overall organization.
Some of our listeners might be thinking, if I'm humble, I get the short end of the stick. I won't go anywhere in an organization.
I don't believe that. I think there are organizations where perhaps that style doesn't fit, and it depends on the culture of that organization. But I think that in my experience, you get much more out of the people in the organization when it doesn't feel like the organization's being led by someone who feels it's all about them. But it's really about the team. It's about the way the organization is trying to move forward. It's about the values and the mission of the organization and trying to reach a vision that everyone can get excited about. And I think that's done with a leadership style that really has that level of humility.
In business today, well, in the world today, the only constant in life is change. As the leader, how do you try to enact change?
Well, I think that is the job of leadership in many respects, is moving the organization forward in a positive way, making changes that improve the outcomes of performance, that improve the contribution that they make to the community that they live in and the people that work in that organization. So from my vantage point, you know, it's really about making sure you've got a good plan, that you have good leaders in place that are accountable for the results, that you're communicating on a regular basis the progress that you're making, and answering the question all the time, why are you doing this? Because if people don't understand the basic rationale for change, they're going to be much more resistant to it. If the message is clearer and the plan is compelling in terms of being able to execute successfully, it's much easier to get the support that you need. And when people believe in the vision, they will come up with ways to contribute to the ongoing change process and allow the organization to make changes that really stick and that work.
A lot of people say change is great for the other people, but not for me. It's the fear of the unknown, fear, false expectations appearing real. I'm afraid, Nance, that if I change, you won't need me. I'll be exposed that I don't know something. How do you address those issues?
Well, I think if you anticipate what the fear issues are and try to address those issues as you communicate whatever changes that you're trying to make, I think it helps people recognize that you understand that change is not easy. But on the other hand, sometimes sitting still is worse. And there are consequences to everything we do in life. And my belief is that if you're not moving forward positively, you tend to be sliding back. And no one wants the organization to slide back and be unsuccessful. So if you tie success to the change process and people really see the connection, it's much easier, I think, to make that change happen.
Let's talk about the future of healthcare in America. Today, the federal government and the state government pay 50% of the health bill in this country. Talk about the future.
Well, I think the future in healthcare actually is very bright. We are a huge economic force in society in general, and certainly in states and local communities across the country. In many communities, healthcare is now the leading employer, and in many cases, the leading economic supporter of the community. But really what we have to do is figure out how to challenge ourselves to improve the clinical quality as well as reducing the expenses that are associated with healthcare so that it's affordable for everyone that obviously needs the services. So for the future, we've got to figure out how hospitals and physicians and insurers and the government can really work together to drive that level of change and improve the outcomes that we all want. Because one thing about healthcare is we're all going to need it at some point. So we want it to be available and be very, very high quality when we need it.
A few weeks ago, we had Peter Nielsen here as a guest, and that man has muscles in places where most of us don't even have places. And he talked about that this is the first generation where statistically the young kids will not outlive their parents because they're overweight, the awful food they're eating, lack of exercise. What's the system trying to do to address that issue?
Well, I think this is why healthcare has to work with other community organizations to help address the preventive needs and the wellness needs of our young people and all of us who are trying to extend our lives. And there's no question that exercise and nutrition are at the core of what we have to do to prevent illness. Unfortunately, you know, the lifestyle today that young people have, sitting in rooms, working on computers, playing games without having the activities outside that many of us had when we were younger, is contributing to this type of situation. And it's going to be very important that that education and schools and after-school activities and community services really complement what we're doing in healthcare to get at that front end, which is very important. At Henry Ford, we are involved with 13 school-based clinics for young people to really help them get more attention focused on what they should eat, the level of physical activity, and other things they can do to really take care of themselves.
For the listeners tonight that are interested in healthcare administration as a career, what advice would you give them?
Well, first of all, I would encourage them to consider this wonderful field because it provides an enormous opportunity to contribute in meaningful work on a daily basis, working with marvelous, talented, very caring individuals. So the work environment is very positive, it's very complex work. So for those people who like to do different things every day, it's perfect. But I think if you're considering this profession, it's very important to work in hospitals, work with doctors, get some experience at the front line so that as you move into a leadership kind of role and get more education and preparation for the work, that you really understand the business and you understand the importance of it, the sensitivities required to do it well, and that you respect the people you work with.
A while ago, you gave a speech and you told the audience, quote, "Always follow your heart." Why?
Well, I think really for all of us, you know, we have one shot at this life. And it's so important that we have passion and that we really enjoy the work we do. And so I think following our heart, as opposed to whatever the latest article might suggest in terms of the career for the future, you have to do the work that you love. And so if you are following your heart, I think you're going to be able to be more successful because when you love what you do, you tend to do it a lot better.
When you watch U of M play the Buckeyes, or when you watch U of M play Duke University, what does your heart tell you?
Having moved to Michigan, anytime U of M is playing or Michigan State, I've got to be a fan, except when they're playing Duke.
In 2008, you're going to open a new hospital in West Bloomfield on Grand River. $310 million hospital, 300-bed hospital. And you've just hired, in the last couple months, Gerard Van Grimsven to be the president and general manager of that hospital. This man has been with the Ritz-Carlton in Dearborn. Why did you ever hire a guy who's run a hotel to lead this hospital?
Well, I didn't just hire a guy who ran a hotel. I hired Gerard, and he is a very unique leader, an individual that has been known in his career for developing people, for creating excellence, for driving very high-quality customer service, and being so sensitive to customer needs. And that's exactly what we need to do in healthcare at a higher level than we've done it in the past. So Gerard is bringing new leadership qualities to our team, and he is complemented with a lot of people that know the healthcare business and can really support his learning as he gets to know the other requirements of running a hospital. But he is very unique, and we're delighted to have him.
One of the many traits of a great leader, Nancy, is to make decisions, to follow your heart, and you did this with this person. Some of us might say, well, I don't want to fail. You know, if I make a wrong decision, I'm out of here. What do you say to those people?
Well, I think you have to, at some level, be willing to fail in order to take, you know, the kinds of risks that are going to lead to hopefully the best outcomes. It's true in everything we do in life. There's a balance between risk and reward. And if we never take some risk, we're probably not going to have the level of performance that we're really capable of. So I think you want to take calculated risks. I don't view hiring Gerard as a risky proposition. It is certainly not typical, but it is clearly something that I think for us is going to work very, very well.
We're talking to Nancy Schlichting, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Nancy Schlichting, who earlier this year was named Detroit's 16th most powerful person. Peter Nielsen, Nance, was 17th.
So,
some statistics. Oakwood Hospital recently completed a $100 million new facility. Beaumont wants to raise $180 million new facility. Children's Hospital of Michigan, $110 million. Karmanos Cancer Institute, $120 million. U of M, $500 million. Word on the street is that you're going to be announcing a new campaign in 2007. It seems that the wants, the needs of all these hospitals are unbelievable. The appetite for money and new facilities are insatiable. Why?
Well, healthcare is a very capital-intensive business. Not only the bricks and mortar, the facilities that are required to deliver good care, but also the technology, both information technology and medical technology that we purchase to enhance care in both the efficiency and effectiveness. So it is a very capital-intensive business, and many of our facilities are quite old. The replacement cost for, you know, healthcare organizations is very high, unfortunately, because of the technology and all the infrastructure that has to be built in to provide safe care. So it is an expensive proposition, but we also have 5 million people in this general market area that we're serving, and the population is aging. And the demands and the needs of our patients and the community are also increasing. And frankly, the ability for us to solve problems that we didn't used to solve is also increased. We didn't used to provide joint replacement for people or open heart surgery for 70-year-olds. And we do all that today safely. So as a result, the demand for care is much higher.
How is Henry Ford Health System trying to reduce costs?
We're working hard on the quality front as well as the administrative efficiency front to reduce costs. And on the quality front, when you can reduce infections or reduce complications of care, you're reducing costs because patients don't need to stay in the hospital as long. They go home to their families more quickly. And we don't have all of the added tests and other things that come with those associated expenses. In addition, on the administrative side, we are a system, and we work to integrate our work and standardize our work so that we can, again, increase our efficiencies and reduce our cost. And our cost per unit of service at Henry Ford Health System the last 3 years has been almost flat because of the growth we've experienced and also the administrative efficiency work that we've been doing.
What are you doing to work with the businesses, the employers who are trying to reduce cost?
We've partnered with all three of the major autos on the area of chronic disease management and trying to improve the process of care for their employees as well as the broader population of patients who are being treated for diabetes and congestive heart failure and other areas that are very costly. And we think there are ways to improve, again, the outcome of care and reduce costs. We've also worked on e-prescribing. In fact, Henry Ford Physicians now are the largest site in the country to use e-prescribing to provide a better product, use generic drugs more efficiently and effectively, and again, reduce the cost of care as a result.
7 years ago, Henry Ford Health System was instrumental in starting City Year Detroit. Can you talk about that?
City Year Detroit is a marvelous program that allows young people, usually in their late teens and early 20s, to be part of what is often referred to as the Urban Peace Corps. It allows them to learn about the community within Detroit, to participate with schools and hospitals and other businesses in trying to improve the results of who we are, including education, including the quality of life, including the cleanliness of the community. They contribute in many meaningful ways.
Would you talk to us about the role faith has played in your life?
Well, I grew up as a Lutheran, as a young person. My oldest sister actually is a minister, and we always felt that faith was part of who we were in terms of the values that we held dear. And for me personally, I've worked for two faith-based organizations in healthcare that have allowed me, I think, to even understand the values of community, the values of giving back, and the values of finding meaning for all the individuals that I work with as an important component of my leadership approach.
Nancy, is the American dream still alive today?
I absolutely believe the American dream is alive. We live in a society, and particularly in Michigan, where there are more immigrants coming in all the time. And my grandparents were immigrants from Germany. They truly lived the American dream. My grandfather had an eighth grade education and founded his own company and did very well and supported the education of his children. And that's what it's about for a lot of the people that are coming to Detroit today. They want a better life for their children, and they are working very hard to make that happen.
Our state is in a major transformation. Are you hopeful about its future?
I am. I think Michigan underplays its opportunity many times. You know, moving to Detroit from other parts of the country, which I did, and being very intentional about that decision, I'm very bullish on this community, and I think it has tremendous opportunity. Akron, Ohio lost a huge portion of its jobs in the 70s and 80s and has come back very strong because of trying to diversify the economy and look for where the opportunities are in the existing economic base that is there. And I think we can do the same thing in Michigan.
The Super Bowl, arguably in those 6 months before the Super Bowl, more was achieved in this city than the 30 previous years combined. What have you seen since the Super Bowl was played?
Well, I think that there's more confidence in our community as a result of the Super Bowl than we perhaps had prior to it. Everyone was kind of holding their breath to wait and see how Detroit would do, and we did exceptionally well. And so now when we talk with outsiders about Detroit, they're not as negative as they once were. They see the hope in this community. They see the opportunity. And I think we have to continue to build on that confidence in a way that will allow the focus and the leadership that came about during that period to continue and really foster really good changes for all of our citizens.
What dreams and goals do you and your 16,800 teammates have at Henry Ford Health Systems?
Well, our vision is to be part of the solution for healthcare in this country. We, because of the way we're organized, because of our partnerships with so many different organizations, including major employers, we have a chance to really try new things, innovate, really partner and have strategic alliances that build better quality, better cost effectiveness, better service. And we are excited about our future, and we're excited about being part of the future of this community.
What are you the proudest of in your life?
I think I'm most proud of the fact that people in our organization believe in my leadership, and they believe in what we're trying to do, and they make me feel good every day, and I try to make them feel good every day. And if I can continue to do that, that's really what instills in me the confidence that I can take this job on and hopefully do it to the very best of my ability. But the relationships that I have with the staff and throughout this community are the things that I just hold very dear.
Personally, what are your dreams going forward?
Well, I have the best job in healthcare today, and frankly, I never thought I'd have such a marvelous opportunity to lead such a great organization as Henry Ford Health System. So I just try to make every day count. I try to seize opportunity, and I try very hard to make sure that I am personally living my values and contributing to the betterment of our community.
Last question: what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I think anyone looking ahead to their own careers should really, again, try everything they can in terms of experience and exposure so that they have a better idea of what they will have passion for, what they can be great at, and how they can make a difference in the world at large. Young people today are fantastic because they're so open-minded. I love working with them. They're growing up in a global world, and I think they're going to be fantastic. So I think we should encourage them every way we can.
Nancy Schlichting, thanks for not only what you do for this community, but the manner and the style with which you do it. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.